those searchlights up on the towers. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Good morning, I'm Herb, and welcome to Community Spotlight here on a rainy Friday. I try and bring in someone from the community or an organisation to talk about their journey or their events or how they are contributing to ARMADA. And today I have Bar Finch. Good morning, Bar.
Morning, Herb.
Well, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Now, you've got a bit of a long history that we've got a bit of a go through. You were born in Yorkshire.
That's true, in Leeds.
Oh, nice.
Full of smoke and dirt.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of coal burning.
A lot of coal burning, every house.
And you came as a 10-pound POM in 63.
That's right, that's right.
To Sydney.
Exactly.
And what did you do in Sydney?
Okay, well, the New South Wales government was desperate for teachers. For £10, you were offered, if you had a university degree, which I had, but I didn't have any teaching qualifications, they said, give us £10 and we'll whiz you over to Sydney, put you in a school straight away, and just stay for 2 years in Australia, and that's your obligation done. And I thought that sounded like a rather good adventure.
What degree did you have?
Arts, English, philosophy and psychology, but no teaching, no education.
73, you came to Armidale.
That's right, yeah.
To escape Sydney.
More or less, yeah. Sydney just seemed dirty and busy, and at that stage we had two young kids and thought country life might be a bit better than this. We loved Australia, but, you know, we thought country life would be the thing, but weren't quite sure that we knew that we could survive, because my husband was also from England and had been brought up in a big city, and we weren't sure that we could manage in the country. So we saved up and had enough to live on for 6 months and support ourselves. And a friend in Armidale, who I'd shared a flat with when I was first in Australia, said, we've got a hut on our property and you can have it for $10 a week. So we thought, okay, we can live for 6 months, see whether we like the country, and then dig in. And within weeks, we knew it was a good place.
So town planning, where did town planning come in? You told me that you had town planning in your background.
I do. Okay. When I came to Australia, I had the degree. I did only 10 weeks of teaching. It was casual teaching. So I left teaching and got another job, proofreading. So I was working in an amateur theatre as well as working for pay. Was thinking, I obviously want to do a better job than this, but I'm not quite sure what sort of thing. And a couple of people in that theatre, one was a professor of architectural design at New South Wales Uni, and the other one was a senior engineer in the government, and they said, look, town planning would suit you, you're sort of hands-on. And so I enrolled in a postgraduate diploma at Sydney Uni and did 2 years part-time. Yep.
So that gave you an inroad, I suppose. When you came to Armidale in 73, you actually got a job at the UNE. They were building buildings.
They were building buildings.
For
not
a couple
that I
of years.
Was designing them, but yeah. Yeah. So I had been out of the workforce for 5 years by then, because I had small kids, and my husband and I had an agreement that we'd take turns to work while the kids were small. So I'd had my turn at home and he'd had his turn at work. So when we moved up to Armidale and decided to stay, it was my turn to work. And I just fell into a job at the, as you did in those days, at the university for the Architect Planners Department.
And then, you moved to council, our local council?
I did work at council in 1980 and did the Armidale, the community profile. It was a special project that the state government did, funding councils to employ somebody to do a profile of the community. And I was already involved in community activities then, but it really gave me a big insight into the wider community.
Now, we might go back a step.
Sure.
You tell me that you're involved with 2RM Community Radio and its first transmission in 1976.
I was.
Tell me about that.
Okay. My husband was on the board at that time, because the community radio was set up as a cooperative, so I was hanging about. I wasn't on the board. And we kidnapped the mayor at the time as a stunt. He was perfectly willing. So he was roped up in town, driven out to the university, and because it was based out there, the studio initially, at the student radio station. And he was kidnapped, and he was only released when he agreed to open the radio station. That was Peter Pajoli, which was a load of fun. Yeah, so the radio started and did get some government support initially. So there was money for a paid coordinator, which was a great thing to start a radio station.
And you did, in those days, obviously a lot of current affairs, women's words and music, you tell me there was a show.
That's right. That was later. That was coming up to 2000 or so, which was a Sunday middle-of-the-day program, and four of us shared it and took turns and played women's music and had items about, often with local women who were doing extraordinary things.
And I think you tell me there was about 40 presenters back then.
Probably in the 70s and early 80s, yeah. Each with, and there were a lot of talk programs. There weren't too many. I mean, there was classical music, which was hard to find on the airwaves because Tamworth was the local ABC, which did sport and local news and so on, and the commercial station 2AD. But you couldn't sort of plug into a wealth of audio anywhere in those days.
Well, it's interesting that some of our listeners have said to us that they really enjoy the talk on the radio. And that's why they listen into ABC quite regularly. And
yeah.
But basically in the 70s also, you got involved in peace movements.
Locally, yes.
And what were they?
Hiroshima Day, most years we had a rally in the mall or in Central Park. And then so we had an Armidale peace group. And then in 1983, I was involved in the women's peace camp at Pine Gap, where 14 of us from Armidale went. We had a local organisation when we heard there was going to be a women's peace camp at Pine Gap. We started a little group meeting in people's houses, and 14 of us went off to Alice Springs, lived in for 2 weeks or 10 days at the peace camp.
In the summertime or wintertime?
November the 11th.
So it was quite hot.
It was quite hot and very dry and dusty, and we were way out of town on the road that leads into Pine Gap, and we were camping for 10 days. All the water was trucked in. Very well organised it was. And the local ABC man in Tamworth, whose name now escapes me, who was the anchor man for the ABC, we'd done publicity with him, and he said, look, while you're in at Pine Gap, we want to know what's happening. We know it's going to be big, so you make reverse charge calls to me and I'll interrupt the program and tell people that you haven't been arrested or whatever. And none of us were arrested from Armidale. But
well, that's very interesting, and I think we will actually unpack a few of these other movements that you've been involved in, activities. But just to finish off a bit of employment, you did work with DOCS for the Department of Community Service for about 8 years.
Youth and Community Services, and in the 80s I had been working at council as a community worker, and I went to work with the department as the regional planning and research coordinator.
So would you describe yourself as a community activist or an environmental activist at all, or what does that mean to you if I was to say that?
I'm very committed to community, and I wouldn't necessarily some of it is environmental, some of it's social justice, some of it is Aboriginal rights. So it's a whole range of things, but I really very strongly focus on the local community. Obviously aware of what's happening in the world and the nation and the state, but I really care about that local granular
context. So I'll ask the question that I ask most people when we get to this point. What was it in your childhood or your youth that actually has put you on this path of that local community focus?
I don't think there was a sort of road to Damascus moment for me, but I was born in the war, so I was brought up, my school days were British Labour government, who everybody had thought Churchill was terrific in the war, but when the war finished, they said, oh, well, we've had enough of that. We'd rather have something a bit more socialist, and elected Attlee. So for my whole childhood, I was a beneficiary of an egalitarian, not really in England, you can't really say it's egalitarian, but a certain feeling that everybody has to look after everybody else. And that was really strong. And so there were things like free orange juice, free milk at school, free cod liver oil. It was important that all the children got looked after, and a whole lot of things. And I got an excellent education. And I think that made me feel that that was important. And probably the smaller community thing came later when I moved to Armidale and got very conscious that this is a perfect size for everybody to be looking out for each other, really.
Now, I think that is a road to Damascus in the sense that that period was a fairly a longish period. It wasn't just 6 months, like it was a period of government. It also then would have entrenched the idea to look after others because you were being looked after.
Yeah.
So treat people equally.
Yeah.
It was interesting that I saw on the TV the other day that Ed Sheeran, the musician, he has a foundation to bring music back into state schools, because when he was in a state school, he was given a guitar, he was given lessons, all free of charge. But all that has been taken out of state schools now. There's no music unless you pay for it, no instruments unless you pay for it. So his foundation, from his wealth that he earns, goes back into the state schools to provide music, scholarships, music instruments.
It's actually really bad that you have to have charities supporting things that are essential. And another thing I experienced was rationing as a child, and people would say, oh, wasn't that terrible? No, it wasn't terrible at all. It meant nobody went without. And so the fact that you know, when we go and visit relatives, you would take along some tea and some butter because everybody was on a ration. So if you were going to visit for a meal, you'd take a contribution, not just as a gesture like we do now, you take a bottle of wine when you're invited to dinner, you would take part of your tea ration or your butter ration. And that just made sure that there weren't people sitting on the street with a polystyrene cup wanting your small change.
Well, the more you tell me, the more I'm convinced that that childhood experience is the thing that puts you on this road. So let's just go down this path to environmental activities or environmental sharing, community-based. You're a member of SLA.
I am.
Now, I read from their website, Sustainable Living Armidale, Connect, Create, Inspire, Act. Living in Armidale, New South Wales, Australia, we aim to raise awareness of the implications of climate change and the depletion of natural resources, to build networks and inspire and empower our community to build a more self-reliant, resilient and sustainable future. So did that's what brought you to SLA?
I think living in Armidale, the environment brought me to that concern. I mean, I think probably in Leeds I wasn't much thinking about environmental issues when I was a child. So in the early 2000s, the world was clearly in a crisis with the climate. Everybody was convinced oil was going to run out, things were going to run out, we were using too many resources, and the temperature was rising. And so in 2007, some people got together along with the council as well to raise awareness, and out of that weekend, about 60 people met in Kent House and said, we want to keep something going. And so SLA was set up. And at the same time, Transition Towns was another organisation, international but with local chapters, and there were people thinking along those lines too, but they eventually combined.
And SLA, do they have some of these sustainable living houses? I remember some tours.
So I help organise the sustainable house tour every 2 years, except in COVID. And alternate years, there's a backyard garden tour. So SLA has got separate action groups. Any three people can say, we want an action group about, for example, Jen's weathering group, There's a death cafe happening, so Sustainable Death, of all things, is another group. But there's always been a transport group, an energy group, climate action group, and they all operate independently, so it's a very good model of volunteering, but all connect with each other so they know what they're doing.
So the interesting thing then, what I just get from that, is that you're not joining one organisation with one single aim and activity. You can actually join that organisation because it's got a broad agreement with your beliefs, but then you can actually choose...
Act on particular things,
whether it's, as you said, whether it's the climate action or whether it's biodiversity or whatever it is.
And in fact, in 2015, when the Paris climate talks were on, there was a lot of energy up for that. And SLA did a fantastic job of pulling together all the schools. We had about a 50-metre-long banner that lots of people had drawn on. Different schools took different sections and drew their images of their, for the children, their fears about climate change or the beauty of the climate. And that was a very important thing. And we had a big thing in Central Park where the whole, that was called the Armidale Road to Paris, which was a major event. And that was, SLA got behind that.
Well, just before we go any further, if anybody wants to become a member of SLA, how does that happen?
Go on the website and you can sign up. I think it's only $10 a year. And you might be interested in transport or energy or climate, and then you be put in touch with those separate groups.
So that website is slarmidale.
Yeah,
slarmidale.org.au, and I have a look here. You can actually go to the membership page, fill in your details. Yep, $10 into the regional bank account, which is the BBS, and the account number there, and your details. Is there a newsletter?
Comes out online, yeah, SLAM, SLA magazine it used to be. But there's also an event, when you go onto the website, there are, you can see what's on in Armidale, and there are all the, most of the environmental or climate related events appear on there. So,
well, I'm just looking at it now. Reducing wood smoke emissions.
That's one, yeah.
Renewable energy education, advocacy and community health. Climate action Armidale. Transport. Wildlife Habitat Group, Armidale Community Gardens, Armidale Local Food Group,
yep.
Armidale Urban River Care Group,
yep.
Electrify Armidale,
yep.
And the one we'll talk about now, High Country Rising Tide. Now tell me what that is.
Okay. Rising Tide is a all-volunteer organisation started in Newcastle, New South Wales, mostly by young people who were really concerned about the climate. Some of them had been in the school's activities for climate. And 3 years ago, they organised what they called a protestival to block the coal port, because they recognised that the Newcastle coal port exports a vast amount of coal, which doesn't count against our country's emissions because it's not burnt here. But it is 1% of all the greenhouse emissions of the world go through the Newcastle port. So these were kids living in the Hunter, started it off, and it has now become a volunteer collective from people all across the country. And they've had, 2 weeks ago, they had their third annual protestival. 24 people from Armidale went down to it. Some people camped, some people stayed with friends, and it was an amazing event.
So how do they protest?
Peacefully and non-violently. That's partly why it's called a protestival, because there's a lot of joy. In our group, we had, there were three kids from three separate families with their families down there. So it's very child-friendly, catered. So it's all volunteer. So 8,000 people were there. They had a huge community kitchen as well as commercial food places, so you could buy your food, or if you were volunteering for a job, you got a free meal, or you could pay the organisers for the meal in advance, so there were no tickets. So they created 1,000 meals at breakfast, 1,000 meals at lunch, and 1,000 meals at dinner, all volunteer, including me chopping up carrots and so on, all fresh food. So it is like how could we run things as a community in the future where everybody gets a go? Back to my childhood, if you like. Everybody's being looked after. Everybody's determined to be kind and peaceful and have an effect. So we gathered on the beach, colourful. People went out in kayaks, all completely safe, all were helped by somebody, all had life jackets and went out into the channel. And at a certain time, some people who decided that the situation is so dire for the future that they're prepared to be arrested. So it's civil disobedience, direct action for those people who choose to do that personally, and other people who are supporting the fact that they're doing it, who went out into the channel. There was no actual danger, personal danger to anybody. They didn't. A Greenpeace crew did go to an actual ship out in the ocean, but the rising tide in the harbour, it was perfectly safe.
Were there any arrests?
There were quite a lot of arrests, yeah. What was very interesting was last year, one of the arrestees was a 92-year-old retired Uniting Church minister who was arrested by the cops, and went very gently. The cops were not difficult in any way, but they were very present. This year, there were a group of oldies rising, of which I'm a member, but I wasn't going to be arrested, who were willing to be arrested because they're thinking about what sort of environment there will be for their grandchildren, and went out in a boat, all very safe, and the cops wouldn't arrest them. They did not arrest. And there were quite a few people of quite mature age. I think one or two might have got arrested, but the cops basically did not want that.
So this is in its third year.
Yes.
So you said 8,000 this year.
Yes.
So has it increased over the time?
I think there were 7,000 last year, and I don't know how many the year before. And it is also morphing not into just an annual event, but strategic things happening that are all decided by gatherings of people. So it's not like there is a top person at all. It's very much decision-making as horizontal as you can get it. So we're a little hub in Armidale, and we have a representative, and we are fed information and we feed information back. It's a great group in Armidale. We've got a get-together on Sunday out at Dumerick Dam just to have a sort of gathering, and there'll be a few kayaks out there.
Well, that's the place to have it. It's beautiful at Dumerick Dam.
It is. It's very beautiful.
So let's think about what might be for the future for you. Are you going to continue with the SLA and Rising Tide? And
look, there'll be a sustainable ideas? House tour in 27, probably, if there's more violence in the world, which seems to be inevitable. I will protest and we'll just keep going, but locally, and supporting people locally.
Well, look, I think we might tie it up. Thanks, Bar. There's a whole lot of information you've given us about your journey in your life and what floats your boat,
particularly with Rising Tide. I have a floating boat, yes. Can I just say that the age range in Armidale of the group who went down was from 1 year to 90. So this is a broad movement. Youngish 20s, 30, 40-year-olds are the driving force, but there is a very wide age range and at the camp.
So, no, look, I wish you all the best, and I wish SLA all the best. Both you and SLA are gems in our community for what you're doing to raise awareness and to help community tackle some of those difficult things we've got in our society at the moment.
There are many people in Armidale working on this. It is a wonderful community, wonderful community. There must be about 15 separate organisations who were at the National Parks meeting last night, who each gave 5 minutes on their work, and you read some of them out, but it was wider than that.
Well, you just had to
it's
come
a great
to Black
community.
You just had to come to Black Gully Festival in
exactly.
November to see how many stalls were there that were putting the message out to community.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll tie it up there. Thanks again,
Herb,
for coming in, and that's Community Spotlight.
Broadcast then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2ARM.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM 92.1 FM in the car and at work for great tunes and community news.